pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate. You're listening to news, views, and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business, and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome, dear listener, to episode 39 of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove, and we're back to the regular format. The Velvet Glove has returned from holidays. How are you, Scott?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks, Trevor. How's yourself?
I'm well. I was a little lonely last week, and I felt a little bit awkward
just sitting there. I noticed that, yes.
Talking into the microphone. I think I eventually warmed up, but certainly initially it felt very strange doing that. And I did have in my defence, I had a few technical issues as well.
Right.
But anyway, hopefully I won't have to do that too often.
That's true.
Good to have you back, Scott.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Yes. So, first item on our agenda.
Well, before we get into that, Trevor, if that's okay, I'd like to take you to task over something you said last week on your own.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned that the Prime Minister's plan to have the states levy their own income tax was an exercise in stupidity.
Yes.
And while I don't 100% disagree with that, I do think that I did love your point there where you said, well, why don't we just get rid of states? Well,
yes.
I mean, they should go. But if we've got these bloody things, and this is where I'm coming from here, if we're going to be stuck with these millstones around our neck from before Federation, if we're going to be stuck with them, then maybe they should do something. And that means that maybe they should levy some of their own income tax as well.
Yes, but what about the problem that I raised that people can move between states extremely easily, and you know, rich, healthy people might move to one state and then when they get sick, move to a state that will have a better health system, because ultimately the health system you get depends on how much money you pay for it.
Well, that's exactly right, you know, and they've got that problem in the US where we won't talk about health in the US because they don't have government-provided hospitals, but they do have that problem where people do go state shopping for what stage of life they're in. It does happen, yeah, for sure.
So I could just see that happening here.
Of course it would happen here, of course, That would then lead the states to actually have to come up with a plan for it and fix the problem themselves. You know, I'm not 100% convinced in the of the merits of having them raise their own income taxes. But if we're going to have these bloody things, if we're going to be stuck with them, then they should do something.
The other thing is that certain states will be under a tremendous advantage income-wise, and other states a huge disadvantage. So somewhere like New South Wales and Victoria, with all of the corporate head offices, with, you know, your Macquarie Bank head office with its millionaire's factory, you know, somewhere like South Australia just doesn't have that and will never have it, because you can only have one head office. So states like that will just easily raise much more money than states like South Australia, and you need an overarching federal tax to even that sort of stuff out. Otherwise, we'll just get an unfair result.
Well, that's why we've got the GST to even that sort of thing out.
But now we're going to create another unevenness that we've got to somehow even out again with some other formula to try and compensate states that struggle. So anyway, well,
yeah, well, look, anyway, I just thought I'd bring you up on it, that's all.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, I don't mind saying that they've got, you know, in an ideal world, if we were starting afresh, we wouldn't have
state governments, no.
We would just have the Commonwealth government.
Exactly,
but
yes.
Unfortunately, we'll never get rid of the states, and while you say they have to do something, you know, I think they spend the money and the Commonwealth collects it.
Yeah, but that leads to the criticism that the Prime Minister had, where he said, you know, because you've knocked this back, you can't in good conscience turn around and tell us to raise the money for us to go and spend, you know?
But why not? Because, you know, you can knock it back as a bad idea because of the inequality reasons, but say, overall, we need more money, so put the tax up, you know? Like, I think it's just Malcolm Turnbull looking to do some blame shifting. So, anyway, it was an interesting week.
It was an interesting 48 hours anyway. Yes. Before it was all blown up anyway. Yeah.
All right, Scott. So,
first anyway, item we'll get on back our, to where we have to.
No worries. First item on our agenda was there is a petition going around, Scott. So we went for quite a while without mentioning the ACL, and I think we've given them, we've been into them for pretty much the last 4 or 5 weeks non-stop. So we're not alone in that. And there's an online petition, which the article links to, and you can click on it, calling upon the ACL to lose its charitable status and subsequent tax advantages. So have you signed that, Scott?
I have signed it, yes. I signed it today, yes. Mm.
It's easy to do, this sort of petition type thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely, yeah.
We should have done this. Like, this originated from Meredith Doig, who's from the Sex Party, but if we had time and more people, we should be organising these sorts of petitions.
Well, we should, yes. Mm-hmm. It would make life a lot easier. Well, it would give the party more we'd get more known out there, yes, because we would be behind those petitions, yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, a couple of things to sort of come out from this petition, just for people's general knowledge. The laws regarding charities is something that we inherited the British common law, and then we sort of codified it in our Tax Act and stuff like that. But traditionally, from British law, and we've maintained this, is that there are four so-called heads of charity which are worthy of tax relief. And those four heads are relief of poverty, the advancement of education, the advancement of religion, and other purposes beneficial to our community. So for a long, long time, if you can fall within that, you deserve tax relief. And unfortunately for us, the advancement of religion one is in there and still is, Scott. Mm. And again, just for definition purposes for people, advancing religion means promoting a belief in a supernatural being, thing, or principle, and acceptance of canons of conduct which give effect to that belief. So, given that's the definition, it's very arguable that, we say that advancement of religion should not be ahead of charity, but even if it is, you'd say that the ACL doesn't advance religion. I mean, they're a lobby group promoting the bashing of the Safe Schools program and, bashing the idea of same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But, the sorts of things that you're supposed to be doing under advancement of religion are teaching the practice of meditation, spreading the teaching of Islam, providing instruction on the Jewish religion, operating a church or a synagogue or a mosque or a temple, or providing religious education, such as a Sunday school program. I mean, these are the sorts of things that are supposed to be under advancing religion. And, it's arguable, I'd say, that someone like the ACL doesn't fall within that definition anyway.
Well, I don't think they do. I mean, they're clearly just a lobby group.
Mm.
They're not there to advance religion at any way. They just lobby what they think the religion says.
And as I've rabbited on many occasions now, they specifically avoid using religious terminology. So Lyle Shelton can go on Q&A for an entire hour and not mention God or the Bible and studiously avoid the topic of religion. So so at some point, that clever sort of line of argument should come back to bite the ACL in the form of losing protection under the charities, tax loopholes.
Well, it should.
Hmm.
You know, and just on that, there was a picture that got forwarded around on Facebook, and it said 64% of Australians oppose tax exemptions for religions.
Yes. Actually, we'll get onto that a little bit later with the...
Okay.
Yes. I'm a bit worried now about my quiz. Oops.
Okay.
Okay. Have you been looking at the Essential Report? Yeah, okay.
No, I haven't looked at the Essential Report. This is just a picture that was going around Facebook, that's all.
It's all right. I've got a couple of spare quiz questions.
Okay.
Just in case. Next item on the agenda, Scott. Miracles. And Sydney was fortunate enough to have another miracle occur on Easter Sunday, Scott. And, you know, you might think a miracle would have been, you know, some poor kid cured of cancer, or somebody, a blind person can now see, or, you know, something like that. But no, in this case, a car crashed into a Sydney church, injuring 5 people. And that was a miracle.
Mm.
And of course, folks, the story is that, you know, a little old lady driving her car has lost control, crashed into a church by pure accident, injured a number of people. Fortunately, nobody died. But given the victims and everybody else there was deeply religious, because after all, it was a church, they're all turning to the fact that, well, nobody was killed. This is a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, if this is the best you could do for miracles these days, then clearly it's been a long time since we've had a genuine miracle.
Yes.
And, you know, they ought to be looking for something a little bigger than the fact that no one was killed or severely injured by having a renegade car go through their front gate.
I mean, people just don't recognise the stupidity of this argument. So we've got Mekong Payek, 53, was sitting inside the church, metres from where the car hit. It just came out of nowhere. We could have died. Oh, my God. God is looking down, Mrs. Payek said. Like, if God was looking down, why didn't God just, you know, stop the lady in the first place? Why did God have to allow the car to plough through, you know, a church in the first case?
That's precisely it, yeah.
Daniel Hugh, there were like 20 or 30 people around. It was a pretty bad crash, and there were a lot of people there, so I'd expect major injuries. But surprisingly, no one really got hurt. That's God saving us. And even the parish priest, Father Wim Hoekstra, who was at a nearby church when the crash occurred, said it was an Easter miracle. No one was seriously injured. So, Scott, it's just depressing, isn't it, that people will latch onto the miracle word in these situations.
Well, yeah, it was depressing. To have people conduct themselves the way they did was ridiculous.
Mm. Now, Scott, another one who's come up for attention recently, and the Institute of Public Affairs, we've mentioned a fair bit, and our new friend of the show, James Patterson, who I referred to in a few recent times, the newly elected senator, Corey Bernardi's theological love child, you know, we've spoken about him. So there's an article here, I don't know if I sent you this one, from The Drum, looking at Tim Wilson.
Yeah, career politicians, Tim Wilson was the poster child for this particular one, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting article. So what the writer has done has compared, has compared Tim Wilson to Napoleon. So here's how he goes about it in summary, is that prior to the revolution, the French had the values of liberty, equality, and fraternity. But after Napoleon, he changed it to property, equality, and liberty. So property suddenly makes it front and centre, and the writer said that was no mistake on Napoleon's part, because property was something very near and dear to Napoleon's heart. So that was Napoleon, and he's found some quotes from Tim Wilson where Tim Wilson has advocated the idea that property is a fundamental human right on par with free speech and equality before the law. And you can't understand human rights unless you support the sanctity of property rights. And so we've got Tim Wilson elevating property rights in the same way that Napoleon did. And this, you know, we sort of touched on last week, I think I did, or maybe it was with the week before, about this prosperity gospel, Scott, where, you know, it's really, if you're a good Christian, sort of this notion of acquiring wealth and kicking the poor while they're down is not very Christian, but that's where the, you know, the new evangelical Presbyterians with their prosperity gospel come in. And Tim Wilson has said, in the absence of property rights, individuals are essentially debilitated in their capacity to demonstrate generosity to others. All charity rests upon private property. If people do not own anything, then they can never give anything to others in need. So, sort of, people have to get rich first so that they can give away second, is the sort of mantra which is in line with this prosperity gospel that the hard, you know, that that element of the religious right is sort of often advocating. So I thought it was an interesting article, and what else does he say here is that further, the capitalist understanding of charity is that one must first acquire personal wealth, then give some of it back. No part of the philosophy contemplates the idea of sharing on the way up. So that kind of summarises the tone of the article, which I thought was interesting view of the way the religious right and the prosperity gospel is sort of justifying what would normally not be very Christian sort of views on things, Scott.
Well, it's not very Christian views, but by the same token, you know, we've long since moved on from what you think, what people believe the Christians should be thinking, and is very much distant from what they do seem to think.
So anyway, that's an interesting development to look at the way Christianity is working in terms of this. Got to be rich first so that you can give it away second, and the prosperity gospel is driving that. So keep an eye on that, folks, because that's a trend that's not going away. And Tim Wilson and James Patterson are, you know, sort of products of the murky IPA are right in the thick of that sort of discussion.
Who was it? I'm pretty sure you mentioned who it was that set up the IPA.
Oh, the guy from Western Mining. If he didn't set it up...
Yes, that's it, yes.
If he didn't set it up, he at least contributed a lot of money to it. So there was about seven different organisations, and, yes, poured a lot of money into that. So, Scott, it's been a long time. Like, early on in this podcast, we started the segment of You Cannot Be Kyrios.
Yes.
And I promised to trot out the segment whenever sports people misbehaved, and I've promptly, you know, avoided the topic ever since, or most of the time. But, Scott, we've got a worthy contender for you Cannot Be Kyrios Award. So I'll play the sting right now.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Thank you, John McEnroe. And I'd like to put up for the award Will Hopewate of the Canterbury Bulldogs. So you're a rugby league follower?
I do sort of follow it in the background. I don't follow it religiously like a lot of people do, but I do sort of follow it in the background. Yeah.
Okay. So Will Hopewate plays first grade for the Canterbury Bulldogs, and he's a Mormon. And in fact, he gave up playing football for 2 years when he went on his sort of Mormon 2-year period where they walk the streets and try and convert people. But he's back from that. But he struck an agreement with the team and his coach prior to being signed, was that he's not going to play football on Sundays because of his Mormon faith. So, interestingly, Scott, if his team makes the grand final, he has not made up his mind if he will stand down should they make the grand final, which will be on a Sunday. How does that work? Like, if you, does God have a grand final exemption? Does he? Like, you're so principled. Oh, I couldn't possibly, you know, play football on a Sunday. God wouldn't want me to. But actually, he's okay with grand finals. Like, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. That is crazy. That is madness.
Yep, so.
I'm going to award a point against you, Mr. McEnroe.
So anyway, your friend, Peter Fitzsimons, who,
yes.
I say your friend, Scott, because you're a member of the Republican...
Republican Movement?
Member of the Republican
Movement. Member of the Australian Republican Movement.
Yeah. Actually, next time there's a meeting, you have to tell me, and we'll go along to that.
Okay, they're generally on a Thursday night.
Are they? How often?
Once every 2-3 months.
Okay. Yeah. So, he, of course, is a columnist with the Sydney Morning Herald, I think. And he wrote a column basically poking a lot of fun at John Hopewade, saying, look, he seems a nice enough guy, and, you know, if that's what he wants to do, he can do it. And, you know, so good luck to him, sort of thing. But it's a completely ridiculous idea, is what he was basically saying. So he has a real go at the Mormon faith as being totally ridiculous, and mentions a little bit about Joseph Smith and the golden plates, etc. And he also goes on to say, this belief in Mormonism is no more odd than the classic Christian belief that a cosmic Jewish zombie who is his own father can make you live forever if you symbolically eat his flesh and drink his blood while telepathically telling him that you can accept him as your master so he can remove an evil force from your soul, which is present in all humanity, because a woman made out of one rib bone and a mound of dirt was tricked into eating fruit from a magical tree by a talking snake. If that is not the best paragraph of prose in an Australian newspaper in the last, I don't know how many years, Scott. Like, what is... Like, what? Isn't that fantastic?
It is fantastic, yes.
He's absolutely torn into the Mormon faith, and then he's given it to the Christians at the same go, and he's really, you know, just... I love it. And he, in the article, he knows he's going to cop criticism, and he just says he doesn't care, and, you know, go ahead, you know, complain, it just doesn't care. Anyway, another article, of course, in The Drum... by a fellow who talks about the Peter Fitzsimons article and says, columnist Peter Fitzsimons has taken aim at NRL player's Mormon faith after he said he couldn't play games on Sundays. Sure, I agree the religion is false, but does that give me the right to belittle those who follow it? Asks Michael Jensen. And he says here, people believe some pretty ridiculous things, you know. And I was once stuck at a school reunion with a conspiracy theorist. He goes on about how he hated having to listen to this conspiracy theorist, and how, you know, conspiracy theorists or flat earth people, you know, you don't have to listen to them, that it's just baloney, and you don't have to respect their views because they're just nutters, is what he's saying. But what he then goes...
The same thing could be said for Christians.
Yeah, well, what he then goes on to say is, he actually says, you know, these sorts of people, they do damage. It's actually an act of love to expose not just the falsehood, but the folly of obvious and persistent error. I'll get back to that. But he says, So that's, you know, in relation to flat earthers and conspiracy theorists. But he says it's a different, however, between valid criticism and disrespect. And he says some belief systems have earned the right to be treated with respect. And guess what? He says that religious belief systems largely deserve respect. So he says some are contemptible, like the religious beliefs of the ancient Aztecs, I think because they used to rip people's hearts out and do stuff like that. But he says the great religions of the world are different. To claim they are simply poisonous is intellectually feeble and historically unsustainable. And he goes on to say that religions actually, you can disagree with them, but unlike what Peter Fitzsimmons did, you've got to argue with some respect. And he says here, Mormonism, which is very much a junior player amongst the world religions, nevertheless has its scholars and its sophisticated proponents, and many of its adherents contribute admirably to their societies. And I would argue it has earned a degree of respect. Now, you've heard all that. So that was written by Dr. Michael Jensen. And you may be...
He's the rector of St. Mark's Anglican Church in Darling Point. Yes.
That's right. He's a rector of an Anglican church. So, as I started reading...
I mean, it's just nonsense, isn't it?
As I started reading that article, I thought that this was just going to be from some sort of secular apologist, you know. Some people... He says about the Mormon faith, you know, some people believe in some pretty ridiculous things. But meanwhile, he's the rector at the St. Mark's Anglican Church. Doesn't see that as being ridiculous. And he reckons that the Mormon Church has earned a degree of respect. He clearly knows nothing about the Mormon Church.
No, I mean, he can't know anything about the Mormon Church because, you know, how can you respect anything that has its... where they've... the founder of it all. Yeah, I mean, we've been through that.
Yep.
And we've established that he was a crook and that sort of stuff. But, you know, what I found incredibly ridiculous was that you've got this, the principles of the beliefs are that this guy used seer stones so he could actually see what was written in his own language from these gold tablets.
Yeah, so he could interpret the ancient hieroglyphics.
Yeah, exactly. Now, these gold tablets, did they ever exist?
He was the only one who ever saw them, and then they got ascended back up to heaven or whatever. So
okay, yeah. Fair enough then. So yeah, that's fine, but you know, it's like nonsense.
The guy's the founder was a convicted fraudster, and His translation of a papyrus of ancient Egyptian has been proven after the Rosetta Stone to be a complete load of nonsense. They are acknowledged murderers. We never got round to it, but the Mormons in Salt Lake City conducted a terrible atrocity on September 11th, a couple of hundred years ago, where they basically slaughtered about 300 people who were...
Oh, yes, I remember this.
Yeah,
yes.
Moving across in a wagon train. So they are an abomination on the face of the earth, and for this guy to say that they deserve respect, words are beginning to fail me. But, you know, the problem for the Mormon faith is it's so recent that we have historical documents that we can trot out to conclusively show what nonsense it is, and it's just through sheer luck that the other Abrahamic faiths are old and are so old that, you know, documentation either wasn't done or was being lost in the process. So the Iron Fist, the Velvet Glove and the 12th Man are all members of the Secular Party. There may be other contributors to the show who are also members. That does not mean that every opinion given on this show is policy of the Secular Party. To find out what is policy, go to the website of the Secular Party. And while you're there, think about joining and signing up, because we need more secularists in this world. Thanks. Right, Scott, in the past, we've been pretty positive about France in relation to different things. Remember?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, remember when the Iranians were proposing to meet with them about some contracts, and they wanted, the French wanted to serve wine, and the Iranians said no, and, you know. Anyway, what's subsequently happened is that
the French said that they would meet for breakfast instead.
Yes, anyway, that's right. Yeah. And then the Iranians said, well, that wasn't formal enough. So, anyway, what's subsequently happened is that Air France is now recommencing flights into Iran. And the Air France has said to the cabin crew that the female members have been ordered to cover their hair once they disembark in Tehran, and the unions for the stewards are demanding that these flights be made voluntary for women. Did I send you this one?
Yes, you did. Mm. And, you know, I mean, like, that's... it's wrong, but, you know, the reality is that... the local laws mean that you must have your head covered and that sort of stuff. So it's pretty much that the stewardesses, if once they leave the plane, they're going to have their heads covered or they'll get arrested.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think?
I can understand the company's point of view that they should be providing them with headscarves and that sort of stuff so they can then cover up once the plane touches down.
Mm.
However... we've got this situation, where was it, that the French see outward signs of religiosity as an affront.
Mm.
So they have banned the burqa and that sort of stuff. They have banned the full face covering and so on and so forth. And even the hijab, the headscarf itself is illegal at schools and all that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
So that's the country that these ladies are coming from.
Yep.
You know, and then to fly into Tehran, which would be, what, 6 or 7 hours flight from Paris,
hmm.
and to go back several hundred years, you know.
Yep. Yeah, move your watch 2 hours and yeah, 1,000 years, Scott.
Yeah, probably 1,000 years to go back in time. But, you know, then they get to a point where you have to have something if you step off the plane.
Mm.
So I think that the union was right saying that there should be voluntary.
Yep.
For female attendees, stewardesses.
Yeah.
I think they should be able to say yes or no to it.
Yep.
But I'm a little bit. Oh, it would just be easier if Air France didn't fly. But, you know,
yeah.
But you know, it would be easier if Air France didn't fly to Tehran, but they have made the decision to fly to Tehran. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, good on them. I think for the safety of the staff, they have to say you've got to wear it. Otherwise, they're just going to end up in jail. But
exactly.
Yes, I think the option of saying that it's voluntary for female cabin staff, whether they want to go or not, is the solution there. So good on the French cabin crew and union for sticking to their guns on that one, and wish them success in that union battle.
Mm.
Scott, we have previously reported on Pakistan, and we had a lady in jail on blasphemy charges. We had a local governor who was saying that, who criticised the blasphemy charges, and his bodyguard shot him dead, and tens of thousands of Pakistanis attended the funeral of the murderer, who was subsequently executed for his murder, saying that he was, you know, a good man, and he was simply upholding what are perfectly just blasphemy laws. And there was a sit-in by about 100,000 protesters who were again protesting in favour of this murderer, and they had a list of 10 demands that they wanted, Scott. And would you believe that in order to move on this crowd, the Pakistani government has agreed to 7 of the 10 demands, including the release of those arrested during the sit-in, that no amendments be made to the blasphemy laws, and to show no leniency to anyone convicted of blaspheming. So this gang of thugs who love their blasphemy laws have been successful. And the thing I wanted to point out was the article I've got, it has the title, Pakistan, Government Bows to Extremist Demands. And Scott, as we know from the marvellous Pew Research Centre, that the majority of Pakistani Muslims support the country's blasphemy laws. Mm. And fully 75% of Pakistani Muslims say that blasphemy laws are necessary to protect Islam in their country. So so there you go. Like, it's sort of this implied thing that these people are just extremist. And I just love the Pew Research Center for getting the facts on the ground as to what people actually believe in these countries.
Well, this is the whole point. I mean, like, you've got 75% of the population, this is the adult voting age population, I assume, have said that they're in favour of blasphemy laws, and, you know, that they're necessary to protect Islam in their country. Well, I find that... What are they worried about that's so weak about their faith that they have to be worried by what someone may or may not say about it?
Yeah.
You know, it's... I find it incredible that they think that they need to protect the faith.
I don't think there's much thought going into it.
Blasphemy laws.
Like, they're just indoctrinated. This is the thing. They're just indoctrinated, aren't they? There's not much thought going into it. It's just hardwired into them. So,
They seem to carry this through from birth, don't they? Well, maybe not birth, but certainly very, very, very young age anyway.
Yep. So that's... you know, a successful indoctrination process working away. So anyway, that's Pakistan. I'm, Scott, never going to Pakistan. Are you going to ever go to Pakistan?
No, neither am I. So no.
I think we'd both be in trouble if we went there. And well, but absolutely no desire. A little bit of economic stuff, Scott. So an article about... deficits and balanced budgets. Did I give you that one?
From John Menadue, Pearls and Irritations? Yes.
Yeah.
It was very interesting, though.
Mm. So...
it was... go on.
Talks about a Committee for Economic Development of Australia, which has a long history of independent public policy engagement. So I've never heard of the Economic Development... the Committee for Economic Development.
I've never heard of CEDA.
Yeah, so you've heard of it.
I've heard of it, yeah. And they do actually come out with some interesting and thought-provoking stuff from time to time, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've mentioned at different times, you know, these right-wing think tanks and lobby groups and things, and you'd sort of look at these organisations and wonder who they are, but if John Menadue says that it's an independent public policy group, then I'm happy to accept that. You've heard of them in a good light yourself?
Yeah, I have heard of them in a good light, yeah.
So they make the point that we've had 25 years of uninterrupted economic growth, but for the last 8 years, we've been running a continuous and substantial fiscal deficit. Which is not good, is it?
No, it's not good. And it's, it comes back to the term structural deficit, which was built in by the Howard and... Costello regime, where they gave away one, possibly two income tax cuts too many.
Yep.
And they probably should have maintained the income tax as it was, rather than giving away those two cuts, threw the extra money into the, what's our sovereign wealth fund called? The Future Fund.
Future Fund for a rainy day.
Yep. Exactly, and then when the rainy day did come, which was inevitable it was going to come, they would have had enough money to sail through.
Yep.
Anyway.
Even if they didn't put the money away for a rainy day, at least we would have still had the tax at the level it was, because they've,
exactly.
they've put it at an artificially low rate as a result. And basically this article says that total government outlays represents 36.4% of GDP in Australia in 2015. So total government outlays 36.4. Compare that to the USA, which is 37.9, New Zealand, which is 40.5, Canada 40.1, and the OECD European countries 49.4. So our spending as a percentage of GDP is significantly lower than the countries that we sort of compare ourselves with. So it's not that we're actually spending a lot, it's that we're not collecting enough, Scott.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, it goes through there. I recommend you actually read it, ladies and gentlemen. It is a very good article. But it really does... where does it say it? It says it anyway, that the conclusion of the report was that there's a revenue problem, not an expenditure problem.
Exactly. And
it, you know, so it makes our current treasurer look like a fool when he sits there and says, you know, well, the problem's in the expenditure. It's not in expenditure, it's in revenue.
Yep. And this article really outlines that very well, and it lists a number of sort of saving measures, but also revenue increasing measures. And, you know, the problem is, Scott, none of them have got the guts to say we need to increase some taxes here to get us back to the position we were there before. Howard and Costello kissed it all away. So I said kiss there, not bits,
well,
but anyway, yes.
Yes, yeah. I know that. Yeah, but, you know, it's, you know, continuing the budget repair levy, 2% higher tax rate on annual incomes greater than $180,000. You know, it's due to cease in 2017-18, but it probably should stay.
Yep.
You know, increasing petrol tax, lifting capital gains tax and superannuation funders, reducing work-related deductions. All of these things, you know, and removing negative gearing. All of these things are the sorts of things that you should start doing now.
Yep.
Because it makes the point further on the article that if you do a little bit now, you will avoid having to pay out an absolute fortune down the track.
Yes. Yep.
And that is the problem, that if unless we are prepared to do something now,
yep,
then we are setting ourselves up for a world of hurt down the track.
Yep. Relatively modest action now will save us from a disaster, which will be in 2054 or 2055 if we just continue doing what we're doing now.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, if we continue down that path,
yep,
we are going to be ending up for a disaster.
Mm. So, dear listener, if you're interested in the budget deficit compared to other countries and a three-page sort of article on what we should be doing or might think about doing, highly recommend that article as a blueprint for a few ideas. Scott, time for the quiz.
The quiz, no worries.
Okay. I'm going to start. Geez.
I'm assuming we've already answered one.
Well, you've come close, but I'm just... I'm going to divert from my main quiz just briefly. Is Jesus Christ. How many brothers did he have?
He had one brother, didn't he?
Up to four. So
up to four. Oh, really?
Mark, okay. Chapter 6, verse 3, and Matthew. Now, this is in Matthew, so you should have known this one. 13, verses 55-56. New Testament describes James, Joseph, or Joses, Judas, or Jude, and Simon as brothers of Jesus. It also,
okay,
also mentioned, but not named, are sisters of Jesus. So,
really?
Yeah. So, various branches of Christianity say that these, you know, were children of Joseph before he hooked up with Mary and blah, blah, blah. But I had no... I had never heard that Jesus had a brother until just the other day. There you go.
No, I had heard that Jesus had brothers, but I thought he only had one brother. Mm. But so he had anything up to four, huh?
I think the Catholics might be particularly keen to keep that one a secret because it never came up in any Catholic instruction I received. So, yeah. Scott, well, this is... okay, you would have... It would have been unavoidable for you to know about the two-party preferred voting polls that have just come out.
Okay, the... News poll is 51-49 to the opposition's favour.
Correct. So I, of course, always quote with these quizzes from Essential Report. It sort of comes out on a Wednesday morning, and they had it at 50-50, so all these sort of polls have little sort of rounding errors. So, so that was interesting that that opposition are in front. And another question that was asked in Essential...
For the first time since Labor has since they removed Tony Abbott as leader,
yeah,
it's the first time that the poll has slipped in the other direction.
Not surprising, is it? Like, he's really burnt a lot of goodwill and capital very quickly, Malcolm Turnbull.
Oh, he has, yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of it is because he's been listening to. Well, he's been doing what he. What he knew he had to do to try and keep the right wing of the party happy, you know.
Right, but yeah, you know, yeah. Well, the income tax with the states that wouldn't have had anything. I mean, I'm prepared to blame the right wing for almost anything, but they probably. I think this was just Malcolm's idea. Do you think?
Well, that one there was clearly Malcolm's idea. Yes.
Yeah. So. So anyway, income tax. It's been proposed that the states and territories be allowed to charge some form of income tax to be used to fund services like health, etc. Would you support or oppose this proposal? What do you think people said?
I'd say 60% are opposed, and 30% would be in favour, and 10% would not know.
It was pretty much... supported was 34, opposed was 34, and don't knows were 31.
Really?
Mm.
Yeah. So that's surprising.
So there you go on that one. You mentioned tax on religious organisations.
Yes.
So in Australia, religious organisations are not required to pay taxes. Do you approve or disapprove of religious organisations having tax-exempt status? So... Only
64%.
Yes, 64% disapprove, meaning they don't want them to have tax exempt status. Only 24% wanted them to have it, and there's a pretty low 13% of don't knows. So that's pretty good for us, Scott, I reckon.
It is, yes.
Yeah. So very happy to see that done as part of Essential Report marketing. So. Or questioning. Yeah. So that was a really good one for us.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. And they did another one here, which basically, do you think the following groups of people would be better off under a Liberal government or a Labor government? And a whole bunch of sort of groups, but basically, of course, the Liberals were considered... that they would make the following better off, which was large corporations... people on high incomes, banks, families with children at private schools, and small business. And then Labor was reported as being favourable for groups, people on low incomes, families with children at public school, single parents, unemployed people, average working people, people with disabilities. So no surprises there, but just interesting. State of the economy... what do you reckon people think, Scott? It's good, it's bad, or it's neither good nor bad? The current state of the Australian economy.
That's a damn good question. I would be guessing here, so I'll just guess. I'll say 35% would say it's good. well, a similar number would say it's bad, and then a similar number would say it's neither good nor bad.
It's a good return to form on the quiz, Scott. good 32, poor 27, neither good nor bad 37. So, the other ones are, some other things there, but not that important. So, Scott, that's the end of the quiz, and we've done balancing the budget, and are you enjoying the show and would you like to help out? There's a few easy things you can do. You can like us on Facebook and you can go into iTunes and leave a positive review. That would be much appreciated. Also, if you're really keen, you could donate to us via Patreon. For details on how to do all this, visit our website. Thanks for your support. And now, back to the podcast. Muslim conference coming up.
Yeah, I can't understand. Oh, sorry, I'll jump in if that's okay.
Go ahead.
But I can't understand this.
Mm.
Like, I mean, we had that situation where that reporter, Ms. Beveridge, however you say her name, where she sued... Hezbollah Tahir. And she sued because she had to sit up the back and...
the other women.
With the other women, exactly. And then they had... She successfully sued, and then this crowd, the Australian Muslims or something or other, United Muslims of Australia, confirmed by telephone that members of the public who attended will be separated by gender.
Mm.
You know, it's just crazy. You know, and then they've got ticket. They've got pictures of the ticket here. Female ticket $70. Male ticket $70.
Yep.
I mean, it's absolutely crazy that they would bother doing it.
Well, I think, Scott, I think what's happened is Hezbollah Tahir perhaps didn't classify as a religious organisation, and I think it might be just a political organisation.
Okay.
And I think that the... So they're an Islamist group. So Islamists are sort of the political, you know, an Islamist wants Islam as part of the law of the land of and wants it installed politically in a country. So
yeah.
I think Hezbollah here might have qualified as a political organisation, whereas this group, the United Muslims of Australia, are a religious organisation, and of course, Scott, religions get exemptions from discrimination.
Section 56D, I believe it was.
So, hence, what's happening, you know, yet again, a reason why we need to change some of these laws. There's laws that give, you know, exemptions to religious groups. You know, people go, oh...
They really should just go.
Yes.
They really should go.
Yep, so it's...
You know, it's absolutely crazy that you've got everyone else in the country following a set of rules, and then you've got one group that doesn't follow that same set of rules, and they get away with
it. Well, it's just common decency that men and women should be able to sit together, and if you've got a problem with that, you've got... It's just disgusting that they're going to segregate men and women because, oh, goodness me, you can't have a man sitting next to a woman that he's not married to, heaven forbid. And this is happening in Australia in Sydney next month. I think it's Sydney, but in a major conference. So Sydney Showgrounds, April. So there you go, folks. Yet another reason why these crazy religious exemptions should be thrown in the bin. Finally...
Well, they really should just be thrown out. Yeah.
Scott, finally, did you enjoy this rant by Michael Sherlock? Did you get into that one at all?
I I did go through that, yes.
He's a straight talker, this guy.
He is very much a straight talker. He has really... He's really just... He goes to town.
I'm going to quote a bit because that meeting in Sydney has really got me angry. And so...
Well, yeah, it should. And as well, it should make you angry, yeah, too.
And I talk about going on a rant, and Michael Sherlock, he's titled his article Islamic Extremism, an Inarticulate Rant, because he knows he's just heading off the cliff with this one. But he says here, you would think that after all the atrocities committed within the last decade or so, that people would stop making excuses for a belief system that clearly fuels such violence. So it goes with some of the sort of arguments that apologists make. One of them is, but those verses have been taken out of their historical context. Extremists are misinterpreting the Quran. You have to understand, those violent prescriptions in the Quran were for a specific historical period. He says, oh, give it a rest. The Quran does not pose as a historical book. It is not Edward Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. It is a religious book, and various verses within its foul contents make it perfectly clear that it is applicable forever and ever. Its authors, whomever they may have been, wrote in a manner that encourages its readers to believe that it is the all-knowing and all-wise word of an all-knowing and all-wise sky wizard, who, for the most part, is just a cheap copy of the Christian and Jewish sky wizard. The authors of this compendium of medieval torture pornography desired all Muslims from their time to ours to kill until all religion is for Allah. How do I know this? It says so in their effing book. And read it. When will our world leaders stop scratching their heads and wondering where all this violence is coming from? And a bit further on, well, he quotes Voltaire, actually. Nice quote from Voltaire. Have you heard this one, this quote from Voltaire before?
I had heard that quote before.
Here it is. Remember this one, folks. Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. From Voltaire. It's so true. But it is not really these...
It really is. It really is. And then, you know, just when we go down here, he says, let me break it down for you, passive enablers of atrocity. Doctrine X, kill unbelievers. Believer truly believes that Doctrine X is the mandate from an all-knowing creator. 3, believer kills unbelievers as a result of sincere belief in Doctrine X. 4, belief in Doctrine X is the effing cause.
Exactly.
You know, he's right. It's madness. Yep. And, you know, the final line... Sincere belief in some of the core doctrines of Islam. This is the root of cause of Islamic atrocities. Mm. You know, he is bang on the money. There wasn't any place for people to write comments, but I was going to be interested to see what people actually commented on it. Mm. But yeah.
So if you like somebody really going to town on Islam, then that's the article for you. So there's a link to that in the show notes. And and Scott, I reckon we've come up to our just over the tick over the hour mark. So
yeah, no worries.
Episode 39, we're done and dusted. And well, goodbye, everybody. And
thank you very much for listening in, people.
Yeah, and we will talk to you next week.
No worries. Bye now.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon.
and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation, so you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners, and that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.